Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today, Wednesday, November 6th, 2013. Lots of things going on. We'll be talking about the elections from yesterday, who got elected, and does it mean anything, and some of the other things that they voted for, big taxes on weed in Colorado, 25%, I believe. So, gambling casinos, you know.
If you can't beat them, tax them, you know. That's the government's position on all regulation.
At least.
If you can't beat them, tax them. That's the way you make, you know, cut yourself in for a percentage.
Yeah, but it's a little less painful when you're smoking.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to be talking about all those interesting things. And remember, folks, you can give us your 2 cents, too, by calling at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. If you have any questions for today's program, but first, let's go ahead and see what the precious metals did today. We have gold up $6 today. Plus six at 1,319. Silver is up 12 cents at 21.93. Platinum was up $12 at $14.69, and palladium is up $13 at $766. Can't wait to see what happens when palladium gets to $800. It'll be interesting.
What do you think will happen?
I don't know. I've been right on palladium for a very long time. It might go over $800. The high that the palladium was, I believe, was somewhere around 1,000 points, but that was a big play on Ford, you know, long, long time ago, 14, 13, 12 years ago. So we'll see if it gets over 1,000. I highly unlikely, but we'll see what happens with palladium. But I've been calling 800 palladium for a long time now. So it's nice to be right. It's nice to be right.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about it, though, Melody.
Al. USDX today is down 22 at 80.47. Crude oil bumped back up again. Maybe it was just down. Maybe it dropped all those dollars recently for the elections. Up 1.49 at 94.86. And, of course, the Dow ended another record high. Solid corporate earnings was the reason as investors cheered as the Dow was up 128 points today at 15,746. Hey, why do you need gold, folks? You know, hey, sell it and buy some Dow stocks. NASDAQ was down 7 at 3931. The S&P was up 7 at 1770. So an interesting day in the market. But it's funny, you know, you have these solid corporate earnings and, you know, they make it sound like, oh, all these corporations are, you know, economies are great, that, you know, all these corporations are making all this money. But when you get down into reading the nitty gritty of these reports, you know, number one, most it surprises me that these corporations, for those who don't beat the estimates, it makes you wonder why they can't, because, you know, they, you know, Wall Street will come out with these estimates and, you know, all these corporations beat it, so it makes it, but they're also sitting there with a lot of cash. You know, they've downsized, they've done without, you know, their whole, I think a lot of them are holding tight to see what happens. They got a year yet until they need to address the Obamacare issue. And but that means they got a lot of cash. And it looks like, you know, they're doing all right. It means their earnings are a little bit higher than normal, but it certainly is not a reflection of a great economy.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And the reason is this: if they are sitting on a lot of cash, it means they are not investing in improving their own productivity by expanding plant size, buying new machines, whatever. All right? They're sitting on cash. They're just sitting there. And that means that the economy is not becoming more productive, and that means we are not growing our way out of the Great Recession.
Absolutely. And so it's, again, another distortion on the numbers that are produced. And I think tomorrow you have the Labor Department releases the weekly jobless claims. You also have the Commerce Department releasing third quarter gross domestic product. You have Freddie Mac releasing their weekly mortgage rates. Yeah, the Federal Reserve is releasing the consumer credit data for September. So a lot of numbers coming out tomorrow. You have selected chain retailers release October sales. So you also have the European Central Bank Governing Council, their meeting to set some monetary policy for the Eurozone. And Berlin also releases their September industrial production figures for Germany. So a lot of stuff is happening tomorrow, and it'll be an interesting day in the markets. So they better appreciate the 120-some point gain today. It might be a different story tomorrow. And really, if you look at the NASDAQ and you look at the S&P numbers, that pretty much tells you that, you know, you got 30 stocks in the Dow. I mean, how hard is it to manipulate 30 stocks to have them keep continuously going up? And then if you lose money, we'll just pull you out and replace you with somebody else that can do
it. Yeah, that's the thing about it. I mean, the Dow Jones is changing on a regular basis. The composition is changing. And the result is, if you have a corporation, what would the Dow Jones be today if it were composed of the same corporations that were there 10 years ago,
yeah,
20 years ago? What happens is when your corporation becomes a loser, they dump you and replace you with another corporation that is, for at least for now, winning. Well, what does that indicate? You know, it's just one of those things. It's another fixaroo. It's a false indicator. All saying is whoever's doing best is doing better than the rest of them. That's essentially what's happening. They're grading on the curve. There's somebody going to be at the top, and they're letting you know these are the A corporations. In a sense, the Dow Jones is not an indicator of America's economic health, but it might be considered as an indicator of some of the top stocks for people to buy at any particular moment. It's a stock recommendation, but it's not an indicator of economic health. Saying these are the best we got.
But, you know,
these are the best kids in the class.
We talk a lot about confidence on this program, and it's amazing how those numbers, regardless of what they mean and how they change it to adapt to whatever rationale they want to provide for that day, But it's all about confidence. It makes people feel good.
Yeah.
You could be broke and living on the street, but hey, if the Dow Jones is up, it means the economy's doing good. I'm just not doing good. Everybody else is doing great, and you know, God bless them. I'm just the one that's living on the street. So, you know, it's but it makes people go out there and spend. And guess what, folks? You have Christmas coming. You have the big season. We're going to be talking, I believe we tried to get to it yesterday, about Thanksgiving and the stores and the number of hours, how it's changing. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on. And I just want to say one more thing today before we move on and talk about the election is manufacturing, U.S. manufacturing. This article was by Fortune, came out of Fortune, and they talk about manufacturing as having an image problem. And what's interesting is they talk about the image of manufacturing, how people think it's dirty, dark, low-paying, that it is a stereotype now, and why companies are having a hard time finding candidates for employment, for job openings. And they say they have candidates, they're looking to find candidates for about 237,000 job openings. And to put that in perspective, it's 89,000 more than the entire U.S. economy created in September. What's interesting, though, is if you're having shortages in manufacturing, which I really don't believe the article to the degree that it was written, but hey, what better reason than to pass immigration? You know, all this immigration, the policies that they're looking to add and bring more people in. If the American people don't want to do the job, and that's the excuse that they'll use, oh, you don't have the American people who want to work in factories anymore. It's dark, it's dirty, it's the low paying. You know, we'll bring in people who will work. And I'm sure you'll hear that argument in the future because we've been hearing that argument for a very long time.
Well, it's been used to justify immigration into this country, including illegal immigration, for perhaps a couple of decades, and say, well, these people are just taking the jobs that Americans don't want.
Yep.
And that's simply not true. That was a lie. At every single instance, that has been a lie. They aren't taking the jobs Americans don't want. They're taking the wages Americans don't want. We've always had people to take care of the dirty jobs in this country. But they got paid a reasonable wage to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And as long as that was true, we didn't need any illegal aliens to do our work for us. What they want is to bring illegal aliens in to work for third world wages. It won't be third world wages, but it will not be first world wages. And the net result is they will drive down the price of labor across the country. And everyone, even if you're not an illegal alien, before this is done, if they've got illegal aliens who are willing to work for $5 an hour, the day is coming when those of you that are making $25 an hour are going to find yourself working for $15. You may not get down to $5 an hour, but the pressure will be to reduce your wage from 25 to 15. And that's one of the consequences of bringing in the illegals, and that's why they want them. Cut labor costs.
And there was an election last night.
There was?
In Virginia.
No kidding.
And the Democrat who won, McAuliffe, one of the reasons he was able to get that position was you had a lot of Latinos to come out and vote because they like Obamacare. They didn't like the other guy saying that Obamacare was bad for this country.
Well, it's a free ride.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's a free lunch, essentially, and they're particularly for illegals and the rest of that sort of thing. I can't say particularly for illegals, but certainly they are going to. They see this as a benefit. They're going to get a free deal out of this thing. Even if they don't have any money, even if they don't have much of a job, they're still going to get somebody to pay for the medical care for themselves and their families. So it's just human nature. They're going to be in favor of that. But how long can it last? Assuming it really even works. You know, again, the problems we have with Obamacare implementing right now, and the problems with people who are angry about the broken promises behind Obamacare. They said, oh, it would never fund illegal aliens. Yeah, it will. It was never going to, you can keep your own insurance company. No, you can't. You can keep your own doctor. No, you can't. The fundamental promises are being broken, plus the prices are going up. It was supposed to be the Affordable Care Act. It was supposed to lower prices. In fact, it will raise prices, certainly for anyone in the middle class and on up. It might be a great advantage for the poor, but it's not going to do much for the middle class and above. It's going to stress most people out in this country and increase the cost of living. I'm not convinced that this is going to stand. I'm not convinced. You know, this thing's got so many flaws and it's been implemented so poorly that there's going to have to be a dramatic change, or we're going to see a dramatic improvement, or we're going to see a significant movement to say, look, that's it, we've had enough, get rid of it. And it could happen as early as next year's election. In fact, if it's going to happen, that would be the time when... If it's going to happen, that would be the time when we will see candidates that are saying, I'm going to Congress. I want to go in order to stop Obamacare. We want to defund it. We want to just dismantle it.
That's not going to happen. When you have more people getting a government check that's working, more people getting a government check than working full time, you're not going to have anybody stand up against Obamacare during the election.
The voters
have already made up their mind for next year's election.
I wouldn't bet on that.
Yes.
I wouldn't bet they've already made up their mind. Who are they voting for?
Democrats are going to get in.
Not necessarily. Again, we were talking about, we will probably talk about this more in the second segment of the program, but we had Terry McAuliffe, Democrat, as elected governor in Virginia in a tight race. And this is Virginia, which has been Republican for the last, some time.
Same as New York City.
Yeah, I understand that. And then we've got Chris Christie, Republican. He wins a second term as governor in New Jersey, which is a predominantly Democrat state. What we have are Republicans are being elected in Democrat states, and Democrats are being elected in Republican states. And I'm not sure if it means anything at all, or if it just means everybody's sick of the whole system.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chris.
Anything other than what they've done up until now, it's hard to say what this really means, but. Yeah. And it might mean nothing. It may be we're just looking at randomness, a certain amount of randomness here, and ascribing significance where none exists. Does it mean anything for the 2016 election?
I'll tell you what, Christie wouldn't have been reelected if Hurricane or Superstorm Sandy didn't happen. I mean, half those Democrats in Jersey live on the shore. It's the only reason he cozied up to Obama, is to get all those people's homes fixed and the boardwalk and everything else fixed. I think he was used by the Democratic Party, and I don't even think he knows it. And because what has Christie really done for New Jersey? Unemployment is at 8.5%. Heck, it's in tie with Mississippi. They rank 41. The crime rate in Trenton is one of the highest, if not the highest, in the country. I mean, so what has he really done for Jersey in the time that he's been there? Nothing except the storm, the superstorm Sandy. And, of course, we saw how he could even go over to Virginia to help his fellow Republican. The GOP, I mean, it's just... You know.
Well, I don't know. It's strange. This is what happens when you have all these strange bedfellows. This may explain some. This may have something to do with
It explains that they're all the same.
Well, but they're all strange. That's my point. Even though they're all the same, they're all strange. One of the things that talked about, they comment about Christie, though, is he is straight talking. All right, which means... he is perceived as telling the truth, even when the truth is perhaps contrary to his interest, even when the truth is likely to aggravate his audience, he is perceived. I won't argue he does, or I won't argue his truthfulness, but he's seen that way. And maybe that's part of the reason people vote for him. We're tired. Maybe we have finally reached a point where we're fed up with liars, and we'd rather have somebody tell us the truth, even if we don't like what they're saying, than someone who insists on lying to us and feeding us information we don't want. We might want to believe, but isn't true. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. I almost thought Melody was going to open the program just now. I'm sitting there, and there's kind of a pause. I'm thinking, isn't someone supposed to start talking? And yes, it's me. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
I'm biting my tongue, Al. You didn't want to talk?
Well, it wasn't that I didn't want to. I just kind of forgot whether it was my turn or not. I was just kind of having a senior moment, and I don't want you to make we'll get a discrimination suit going here, Melody. You start making fun of the seniors. The government, they pay attention to us old-timers. You understand that? We vote.
Don't be. I don't think seniors are as important as they once were. You know, all they care about the seniors.
As important as they once were.
All they care about the seniors are the death panels anymore. But anyway, let's talk about the special. We're going to care. Gold's up. Silver's up. The special price today from yesterday is the same price. So take advantage. We had gold up quite a bit today, $6. We had silver up 12 pennies today. Special is still the same. AU $5 Liberty gold piece. And we also have $25 face value of 90% quarters. All include your shipping, $850. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com. Our website, dgscoins.com. And if you have any questions for today's program, you can send it to questions@dgscoins.com.
See, you're starting to have those senior moments too, Melody. Is it dgscoins that DGS coin. I don't know if I can file a discrimination suit against someone else who's also having senior moments. That's a question we're going to have to investigate. It may be a challenge for the Supreme Court to decide what to do.
Al, mine was not a senior moment. It was it was a youth moment.
I see. No, that's the same thing. And I mean, that's part of, for what it's worth. I think most of the senior moments, they are exaggerated. When you're a kid, you know, you talk about someone, you say, oh, what's his face? You don't want to talk about. You understand? What
a pre-senior moment.
We just didn't care when we were younger. If we couldn't remember a name or whatever it was, who cared? It was no big deal. You know, what's on TV? Let's go down to the bar and have a beer. And then you get older, you start, you start to have those little moments when you can't remember the name or the face, the rest of it. And it starts to disturb you when you get older. It didn't bother when you were younger. I'm not sure we have any more of those moments when we're old than when we're young, but it bothers us. So, but for the moment, I don't think I'm having any more senior moments. So what's next, Melody?
Well, we were in the process of talking about the elections, if you'd like to continue on that.
All right. Well, we were talking. One of the things about it is Governor Christie is being extolled for being pragmatic. He has found a way to work with, they say in an article in the New York Times, Mr. Christie declared that his decisive win should be a lesson for the nation's broken political system and his feuding party. In a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans by over 700,000, Mr. Christie won a majority of the votes of women and Hispanics, and made impressive inroads among younger voters and blacks, groups that Republicans nationally have struggled to attract. The governor prevailed despite holding positions contrary to those of many New Jersey voters on several key issues, including same-sex marriage, abortion rights, and minimum wage, and despite an economic recovery that has trailed the rest of the country. So something is happening there. And how do we explain this? He's not really a Republican. He claims to be pragmatic, but he's not embracing the Republican ideology, the fundamental core values that have been historically been associated with the Republican Party. And you got to sit back and say, does this mean all you have to do to be elected as a Republican is become a Republican in name only? Is it sensible that those people who are associated with the Republican Party abandon principles in order to get elected? Or should the Republican people simply conceal their principles and get elected and then act in a way contrary to what they promised when they were running for office? These are peculiar questions in the contest between pragmatism, which Governor Christie claims to embrace, and ideology. And they're not easily answered. And I'm not absolutely certain that abandoning ideology, for example, is necessarily wrong. Ideally, I'd say it's wrong. I'd say you should be true to your ideals. I get that. But you can also look at it and say, when people are interested in just pragmatism, politicians, I'm not talking about people on the street, but politicians, when they're merely being pragmatic, does that mean that when they're stripped of their ideology, they're just trying to do what works and maybe even what's best for the American people? What do you think, Melody? Is pragmatism a good idea, a bad idea? And should an ideology be minimized and allow pragmatism to prevail, or should we cling to our ideologies?
I think we should cling. I think it would be exciting. It would be hopeful to see someone who stands up. I mean, we've seen it through some politicians of late. They get criticized because they stand up for their beliefs. They do stand up for what's important. And that's how the Republican Party that's how politicians used to be. I believe overall they stood up and said what they believed. And today it's all let's just get along. And
do you have an example?
You can't. I don't believe the problems that we have today you can't have politicians standing up for what they believe in. They do.
Yeah, but
have,
I'm not sure that that's true.
Because
exactly.
I don't think you can keep.
And again, the example is Ron Paul.
I don't think you can keep the system running, and that's their goal, is to keep the system running. Ron Paul, you're right, but he was one.
I know.
Today,
I know.
He's
an exception, and it was a strange. He somehow captured the support of his district in a way that went on for a couple of decades. And I don't know that you could have. He had the good fortune to be in a district that was sympathetic to his ideology. I don't know that everyone can count on that. You might be able to get yourself elected in another district where you advocate a particular ideology, and it might be left, it might be right, but you can't count on that district supporting you for 10, 20, 30 years. Yet, Ron Paul, that's pretty much what happened, and that's usual. But on the other hand, it did happen. Ideology did work, and it wasn't just a matter of Mr. Paul being popular in his district. He ultimately, by embracing a particular ideology, he became one of the most important and memorable politicians of the last 30, 40 years. I mean, how many people will ultimately have as much effect on the country as Ron Paul? You're going to have a hard time pointing to 20 other politicians that have been as ultimately influential. I mean, he laid the foundation for the Tea Party movement. He's credited as being the father of the Tea Party movement. That may be true, it might be false, but he has that credit. He's his influence. I don't mean that he was there and he, you know, said, let's start the Tea Party. That's not what happened with Ron Paul. But the philosophy that he advanced inspired others to start the Tea Party. And so, you know, ideology makes a difference. But it doesn't necessarily make a difference right now. And that's the difference. Pragmatism is what works today. Ideology is about what will work over the course of the next generation or two, or maybe more than that. And so, in this instance, I was much surprised. I asked you, do you believe in pragmatism or ideology, which is more important? And you actually picked one. I expected she's going to say both. She's going to say both. I know that's what she's going to say. Well, I think there's a place for both pragmatism and ideology. And I expected that was what you would, how would you answer? But in this case, I'm going to answer that. There's a peculiar need for both. There's a need for pragmatism and a need for ideology. And but that ideology is extended in time, and pragmatism is more immediate. What do we got right? What do we need right this minute?
Yeah, but the problem is the things that we need right this minute is not good for this country. And that's what they're doing. They're doing the things that are needed right for this country today, and none of it is good for the future.
Well,
it's only fixing the problem today.
There's where you get into the problem and the contrast and the controversy between pragmatism and ideology. It's the idea of, shall we eat the seed corn? You know, you have to have corn every year in order to plant your next crop. If you're going to eat all your corn, including what you set aside as seed corn for next year's crop, how are you going to grow more corn? You're going to have a problem. And yet pragmatism sometimes compels us to eat the seed corn. Ideology compels us to save enough corn to maybe plant for the next 50 years. Neither one is right. Neither one is exactly right, but both of them have a place. And sometimes you got to do one, some the other. So in any case, Mr. Christie was elected in part because he's deemed as being pragmatic. And the other point is he's perceived as being straight talking, which is honest. I saw him in one description after last night's election. He talked about how they make things work. And it's because he's willing to work with Democrats. He's not just ideological in the sense that he's just a Republican per se. He's willing to work.
See, I always think that when you work, when you use the word work, I think of agenda, personal agendas for a group of people, and I think that's really the ultimate. That's what comes to my mind, and that's how I read him. Like I said, what has he done for the state? Really, he hasn't done anything for this. Not that I know of. You know, he's been,
Well, maybe just a matter of style.
Yeah.
It may be just a matter of style. In his own way, he may be emulating Obama in the sense that Obama was elected to the White House based on style, certainly more than substance. Nobody ever knew what his substance was. We still don't know for sure what his substance is. And we didn't know what it was, but he had a certain style, and it appealed to people and say, yay, yay. You know, we're going to start selecting our candidates out of GQ.
I saw the head of the DNC. Oh, it's been a couple years. And I think it was prior to an election. He's talking about how the Democrats, he says, we always got whipped by the Republicans. He says, and finally, and you know, it was pretty much starting with the Clintons, he says, we finally figured out how to win elections. He says,
is this something to do with programming the voting machines? Is this was
probably one of them, but he didn't talk about it. He says the issues are important up to 2 months prior to the election. He says then after that, it's all a likability factor.
Yeah.
He says, and we know that now. And it's like these Democrats, they know exactly. If you look at the New York election, you had the Bill de Blasio. He was overwhelmingly elected mayor last night. He was the first Democrat to lead New York in 20 years, ushering in an era of activist liberal governance in the nation's largest city. 84% of the precincts.
Well, they're finished.
I know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he's talking about, and this is what got him elected, though. He's talking about the elite of Manhattan had their mayors, and now he's ready to give 46% of the New Yorkers living at or near the poverty level need one of their own. New York is done. It's going to be ruined.
Yeah. Well, it'll go through a difficult situation. It will probably go through a difficult situation, and then it'll make a recovery, although it might be 20 years down the road before it does. Who knows? But a contrasting election last night was they elected a white mayor for Detroit, first time in 40 years. Now, they're in so much trouble in Detroit, they've even decided to let a white man try to figure out what's going on up there. We are not necessarily, you know, when they talk about the Democrats, you mentioned that the issues were important up until 2 months before the election, and after that it's the likability factor.
Likability factor.
Well, the flip side is up until, for the last 2 months, is it the likability factor or is it the dislikability factor? It's two ways of looking at the same thing, but what I'm trying to get to is how many of us really vote for a candidate because we like that candidate? How many of us vote Republican because we love the Republican Party and we think they're just so wise and wonderful and honest? And
not anymore. That?
Do we vote for the Republicans or do we vote against the Democrats? And likewise, do the Democrats, the people that are voting for the Democrats, do they vote for the Democrats or do they vote against the Republicans? Are we voting for who we like? Do we like any of these guys? Or are we voting against the party or the candidates that we most dislike? And we put up, we hold our nose and vote for the other guy. This is an interesting question to me because it goes to whether or not the body politic is truly confident, satisfied with the economics, with the political system. Sometimes I think we just vote for some people just because we are so sick and tired of the rest of the crooks. We'll try this other guy over here. Do you think that's happening, Melody, or do you think likability or dislikability? It's two sides of the same coin, but
it probably changes over a period of time. It probably goes back and forth. Yeah. But and right now, I think what gets you elected is telling people how much you're going to give them. I mean, really, when you think about it, we're going to bring the poverty people out of poverty. We're going to, I mean, my gosh, we have more people receiving government checks for all reasons, all together, you know, Social Security and so forth, you know, then have full-time jobs.
I understand.
That's just staggering.
Oh, it's socialism. It's arguably communism. It's certainly collectivism. And it's the sort of thing that cannot work forever. Soviet Union was able to hold together for what? Something like 70 years before they blew up. Then they had this mindset. We've been at this with the New Deal, which in the end is not so different from certainly collectivism in general, communism in particular. A lot of people would object to that characterization, including the producer is objecting to it. He's running the music, trying to get us to stop talking, Melody.
Pay attention, Al.
Pay attention. Oh, my gosh. All right, folks, we're going to have to break for some commercial announcements, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
We have a caller, Casey from Dallas, I believe.
Oh, Casey, how you doing?
Good, good. How you doing, Alfred? Melody. I had a question and something for everybody to think about. But is it possible that our country has gone so far left and so far evil that there is no way that a candidate who stands up for what is right is possibly going to get elected?
It depends on the context, the time context you're talking about. At this moment, you might be correct.
At this moment. At the next possible election.
But what I'm trying to get to is we will react. Whenever we go too far one way or too far the other way, we can at least hope for a correction. And which means that it may be that things have gone badly wrong from your perspective. It may be that things have gone incredibly right from other people's perspective right now. But sometimes, right or wrong, you get too far away from the middle on this thing, and there has to be a correction, although we might not see it for another, who knows, 4, 8, 12 years before we see the correction. Right now, you might be right. Are you right forever? Not necessarily. We can hope that there will be a correction.
I just wonder what the threshold has to be for the American people to stand up and say enough.
Well, I think part of the threshold is we have to begin to recognize fundamental problems. It's not just a question of voting for a particular party or a particular candidate. There are things that are happening in this society that have been happening. They've been working for throughout my lifetime and yours. And there have been forces that have been unleashed in the way we think about things, in the way we establish values. For example, the whole idea of evolution sounds like wonderful and rational concept. But if you accept the theory of evolution compared to creationism, you accept the idea that we are just animals. And as soon as you accept that philosophy, then you have predisposed this nation to abandon the God-given, unalienable rights that are declared in our Declaration of Independence. You can't just look at some of the ideas we embrace, evolution being one, and just say, well, that's reasonable, that's rational, that makes sense. You have to look at the consequence of that idea, and the consequence is you and I are just animals. If we are animals, we have no significant rights. The only thing that distinguishes us from a cow, a chicken, a pig, or a goat is that we are armed. That's all. We are a very peculiar form of animal because we have firearms. And that's the only distinction between us and the rest of them. If the government has its way, if they can perceive us as animals, and very few people realize, you know, they'd listen to what I just said and say, this guy's crazy, that's crazy talk. But I mentioned on the program back, last week sometime, talked about, you can look up Title 21, Section 321 in the United States Code. And you scan through the definitions and you see the definition of food. And you see the definition of drugs, and you see the definition of medical devices, and they are all defined in terms of man or other animals. And that phrase, man or other animals, not man or animals, man or other animals, means the government deems us to be animals rather than men and women. And the consequences are enormous. And yet they're almost invisible. They're imperceptible. The vast majority of people look at this and say, well, that doesn't, who cares about that? Listen, this is big time. But very few people.
Well, I appreciate it. The thing that worries me the most, though, is that too many Americans have become apathetic And I appreciate your time.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Casey. We appreciate your comments. We appreciate your questions. I can see, you know, they're intelligent and they're insightful.
I think if a politician came along and stood up, we saw Ron Paul. He just didn't have the complete package. So in order to get your ideas and your belief and to have a politician stand up for, you really have to be strong. And I'll tell you what, it comes down to money, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look at the Virginia election. He McAuliffe was, what, $15 million more? The GOP cut off some of the money to the Republican guy, and McAuliffe spent $15 million. But I think people would rally behind someone. But I just think, you know, I do believe sometimes maybe these campaign managers, sometimes I wonder, what? I mean, why are you going in that direction? I mean, sometimes you just see what these people do, and I'm sure it's a lot harder to be at least to be on the campaign trail. I'm sure it's a lot harder than what you think it would be, other than the time that you put into it. But no, I think a person could do it. We do have a question coming in. I think what's making the Democrats successful is they speak to the people. I think Republicans speak to the issues, and I don't think the people understand the issues anymore. They've gone beyond.
And there's another problem. All right, these are fundamental problems. Why don't they understand the issue? Partly because of public school education. We have dumbed down. We've been and the media. We've got the other problem with the amount of time you can, I can't think of the term, again, having one of those moments, but the amount of time you can focus on a subject. What's the proper term for it? So you're having one of the moments too, aren't you? See, I told you.
It's on the tip of my tongue.
I can't think of the price, but how long can you focus on an idea? We have lost our capacity to look at ideas for an extended period of time. And when we do that, it hurts us. We can't grasp issues. We've gone through public school education, which has become politically correct rather than teaching us how to think. They try to teach us what to think. The net result is of people who are incapable I won't say incapable, but they are less capable of being able to solve their own problems, think through their own problems. They become dependent. They are intellectually dependent on others. And there is another part of this that isn't even subject to a conspiracy theory. It's not just about public school education and media. It's about we are living in a world that is so complex and so technologically advanced that the vast majority of us can't keep up. It's beyond our capacity. It's not just because we went to public schools or we didn't learn to think properly and the rest of it. We're dealing with things like mathematics and technologies that are so beyond the average person's understanding that we are just left. What do we do? I grew up in an age when automobiles, you could open up an automobile, lift the hood up, and you could pull the engine, work on the transmission, and the rest of that sort of thing. I guarantee you, right now, modern engine is so complex, so sophisticated, you can't do that. You can't just pull the engine out of a new car and work on it under the shade of a tree or whatever. The technology is becoming beyond our capacity to understand, and as a result, that also contributes to our sense of dependence. Our sense of insecurity. I don't know what to do. Will someone tell me? So a lot of things are coming together at the same time that don't bode well for ordinary Americans. We are losing the middle class. We are increasing the size of the lower and classes and impoverished classes and the rich, those people who are able, sufficiently intelligent, sufficiently educated, and perhaps sufficiently ruthless to get out there and understand what's going on and make things happen and take advantage for themselves. They're getting rich, but they're a relatively small number, small percentage of the population. So there's forces at work that are not easily addressed. They're not easily understood. And what can you do other than try to do the best you can? And hope that somehow this thing is going to work out, but we're fighting. This is an uphill battle. Yeah.
We got a question coming in now. Is there a real difference between Democrats and Republicans? As the White House changes hands between Democrats and Republicans, there's a continuum of policies, internal or international. They're only puppets, but the puppeteers stay the same. Communism never collapsed, only changed its face. And Putin is still communist, same as what we have here in America under Obama. And let's not forget Red China. Look at how many of our corporations and our jobs have gone to a communist nation.
No, I understand.
And yet no one, and everybody still continues and is excited to buy trinkets. So, you know, a different view. But the question is your comment on that.
Well, is there a significant difference? And the answer is no. We can look at the Constitution of the United States, for example, and at Article 4, Section 4. It says the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. All right? Now, how many of you people in the audience know what a republican form of government is? How many of you know what the meaning of the term is? And how many of you wonder whether the democracy that we currently enjoy is the same thing as a republican form of government? The democracy is not a republican form of government. They have foisted off a democracy on us under the guise of the New Deal in 1933. And we've embraced this. Hooray, we're fighting for democracy. I would say wee-wee on democracy because I understand what it is. It is ultimately a collectivist form of government. It is fundamentally identical to communism and socialism. A lot of people sit back, oh, that's crazy talk. No, it's not. This country started with the premise that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and that made each of us a sovereign. It was born out in the Chisholm versus Georgia, 1793, Supreme Court case. They said that this nation closed. The people are sovereigns without subjects. You're a sovereign. I'm a sovereign. The rest of the people are sovereign. As a result, the government was our public servant. That's the foundation for the Republican form of government. When we get into the democracy, the presumption is we the people are sovereign, but we are not sovereigns. We are sovereign as a group. We are sovereign as a collective. The collective is the sovereign. And the will of the collective is determined by voting. And when 51% of the voters say yes, then that's the sovereign's will, and we do what the sovereign says. And when 51% say no, that's the will of the sovereign, and we do what the sovereign collective says. But each member of the sovereignty has no significant rights. It's only under the Republican form of government that we have those rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness because they were granted us by God. In the collective, we don't have that as individuals. Democracy is a collectivist form of government. And here we are. We're embracing it. We're fighting for democracy over in, you know, Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever. Allegedly fighting for democracy. The word democracy doesn't appear in the Constitution. And yet no one's paying attention. Same thing with Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, Constitution of the United States. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. When was the last time you saw gold and silver coin in circulation in this country? And the answer goes back to about 1968. It hasn't been here since then. Where? How did we get away from that? It's in the Constitution. The Constitution is the people's law, but the people are not enforcing their law. They're allowing the government because they don't read the law, they don't understand what's going on, and they trust the government. If the government wants to strip us of our gold and silver coins, all right, why not? Sounds like fun. And what has been the result? We have moved from the wealthiest nation on the face of the earth to the most indebted. And it's happened exactly with the transition from gold and silver coin down to these paper dollars and digital currency. You're being robbed, ladies and gentlemen, and you're being robbed because you aren't paying enough attention. And I say you, I don't just mean the people listening to this program. I'm talking about America in general. We don't get it. We don't understand fundamentals. The Constitution actually means something, and you're not going to understand that meaning unless you study it and then you stand up to enforce it. And if you're prepared to do that, we can make a recovery in this country. But if you're not going to do that, guess what? We're headed for a lot of trouble. What we're also headed for is the end of today's program, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money.